Hello, and welcome to Writers Group Therapy.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Roshni. We're writers helping writers with whatever writing ailments you might have.
Whether it's related to your craft or your career, we can help.
Are you ready for your session?
The doctors are in.
Today we have Duffy Boudreau with us. He is a staff writer on the animated show Big Mouth, the docuseries Documentary Now, and the Marvel Hulu series Hitmonkey. He recently wrapped up four seasons of the HBO Max show Barry as co-executive producer, having also served as a staff writer and executive story editor. The series received over 50 Emmy nominations, one for him personally for outstanding writing in a comedy series in 2022 for his episode 710 North. Welcome to the show, Duffy.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you. We usually like to start where we go back to the beginning and learn about the writer's journey, which in your case, I know you grew up with Bill Hader in Oklahoma, so I sense there's going to be some circularness to this story, you know, around what you've done over the years to get to where you are now. But we'll go back and see what happened. So you started, how did you start writing, and how was Bill involved in that, if he was at all?
I think it was just, we met when we were in high school and we felt very lucky to kind of like find each other. This was pre-social media days in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So that was pretty quiet. Tulsa wasn't as cool as it is now. We kind of just met and bonded over movies and, you know, started a kind of a lifelong friendship based on that. But then after that kind of like took different paths, you know, he immediately kind of like moved out to Los Angeles to try to make it happen. And I had this really strange path of kind of trying everything other than writing. I think I always wanted to be a writer, but I think I was really, I think a lot of people have this same experience as they just don't know how to get started really. You know, I had written some small stuff with Bill and we had made like a mock documentary together in high school. And, but I never really, I think, had the courage to just pursue it as a path, until I was a little older and got, you know, worked through some things. And, so I ended up kind of trying to, I'm trying to not do the long, boring version of this because it did.
I know you wound up writing for comics.
It was one of those things where I kind of did this thing where I was, again, trying my best to do everything but writing because I think I was a little afraid to do it, like as a career. And I ended up making this giant mistake, which ended up being like the best thing I ever could have done, which in my 20s, I was working at just like restaurants and worked at a tree service. And then I decided, oh, I'm going to go to law school, which was like the worst idea ever. And, cause it's something I'd never really wanted to do it. I think I was just trying to do it as, you know, to avoid doing other things. And what happened was I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do, but when you go there and you have to like study all this stuff and regurgitate it, and they force you to kind of like face the blank page when you take the test. It's these blue books and you just have to write and write and write. And I think that's where I initially got over the hump of like not being able to face the blank page, strangely enough, was in the place that like I was doing it in this context of school, and it taught me how to like just start from nothing. And at that point, I was just like, okay, well, now I'm going to drop out and I'm actually going to pursue a career in writing. But I was like in my late 20s. So it was like resetting my entire life, going back to the drawing board. I was working at a grocery store. This is a very like long answer, but I just hope this gives maybe a little bit of inspiration to people who started later on. You know, because you can feel like, I feel now, like I've always felt like I got a late start, but I think it's, I look back on it now, I'm like, I'm kind of glad I had some of the life experiences I did, in other contexts with different jobs, you know, different people living in different states before I moved out to Los Angeles, because, you know, I think people have that anxiety of like, oh, you know, I've I really, you know, missed out on this stuff. And, but I guess what I'm saying is don't be afraid if you have to start late. But when I, my first writing job that I actually got professionally was, I was living up in Seattle. There was a lot of comic book writers up there. And I ended up just kind of falling in with some other writers talking about, you know, how you naturally do it. You talk about movies that you love, shows that you love, and just hanging out with these guys and women. I just ended up kind of starting to write comics. And, that was not something I thought I would ever do, but I learned a ton from it. So I think, like, you know, that was, like, I look back on it, it was really valuable. Again, a time in your life when you're, like, confused about what you're doing, you know, just you sometimes you have to, like, fight through those periods and just be like, take from that what you can use later on. You know, and I think, like, writing comics, to me, the most important thing that I took from it that I use later on in TV writing is, you know, you just, it was the first time I worked with editors, and you, like, have to learn how to take a bunch of notes or learn how to, like, get notes and then integrate it and change things and kind of make everyone happy. And that's just a very important thing, I think, for a lot of people when they get into writers' rooms for the first time, just because it is such a collaborative thing, and figuring out how you, like, fit in, how you can help. I don't know. There's just a bunch of stuff that people don't tell you about, when you first get into a writer's room, and you kind of have to learn by going. I think, like, the experience of having, you know, written in comics and having to deal with editors and, you know, doing rewrites and stuff like that, that really, and that collaborative process really helped in the TV context.
So you were like maybe 80-90% of the way there. I was going to ask, what was the transition from comics into scripted narrative? Like, obviously you had, you know, editors and other people looking at your stuff, but what else?
Well,
as far as like the jump.
At the time, you know, it was strange because I was writing the Halo comic. I was like writing sci-fi comics and I was like, well, I've always wanted to like write comedy, and I was writing this stuff on the side, and I was writing like kind of just, you know, writing features, you know, just for my own, just like learning how to write and exploring stuff and finding my voice in that. But, you know, comics were paying the bills, and I thought, well, this is a very strange kind of place I've ended up, but, you know, I want to be grateful for it. But it didn't feel like the place I really wanted to be. And I ended up, so, you know, Bill and I have always, been close, and always just kept contact, and even if we lived in other places, and we always talk about the stuff that inspires us, whether like books, music, movies. And so we've just had this like this friendship that's like lasted over the been over the phone for a lot of our lives. And so when he just got off SNL, he had just started working on Documentary Now. And he was telling me about it, and I just thought it was like the coolest idea for a show. Cause I you know, we're both kind of like film people. So, you know, the idea of doing these kind of not satires, but almost like parody homages to the great documentary sounded so cool to me. But I also thought like, there's no way I would ever work on this show because they've got Mulaney, they've got Seth, they've got Fred, they've got like, you know, Eric Kenworth, they've got a great core group of writers on the show. And it was never something I just assumed, but we just happened to be talking about one episode, and it turned out it was the Vice episode. And, you know, I just gave him some thoughts about, you know, what I think would be funny, like how to handle like the tone of it, you know, and he was just like the next day, like, oh, write those up in an email and send them to me, and I'll show them to the guys. So I did. And I thought, well, if they use like one or two of these, this will be cool. If I contribute even from a distance, that'd be awesome. But then he just was like, he said they were happy with what I showed them. So he's like, would you want to work on the show? And I was like, I just couldn't believe that it was like going to really happen. I kept thinking, well, this is not going to actually happen. But then I guess kept working on it. And I kept, sending him ideas and doing some rewrites on stuff. And I just kind of ended up getting this weird opportunity and taking it. And then, you know, a couple months later, I came down to LA and was on set, and as we were producing a couple of the episodes, and kind of was like you know, just kind of felt like I got thrown in the deep end, but it was really exciting. And that was my first gig. So that was kind of solving the problem of like, through that, I was able to get an agent because I was like weirdly able to like work on a show, you know, and it's that conundrum, it's that paradox of like, you can't work on a show without getting an agent, but you can't get an agent without working on a show. I'd gotten very lucky and I was able to like figure out a way to like get past that point. And from there, I just was like, okay, well, now I have this great opportunity. I'm going to move down to Los Angeles. I was living in Seattle at the time. And then I just, you know, got serious, spent a lot of time writing a pilot, and ended up getting staffed on Big Mouth. And that was my first room. And then kind of just from there, just been kind of steadily working.
So you went from writing comics to doing mockumentary to doing animation, which is like moving comics, and then you went to dark comedy, as I like to call it, with Barry. So
yeah, and Barry's.
But you said you wanted to work on comedy, and I feel like, I mean, yeah, Barry's got humor in it, but wow, is it a dark show?
Yeah, you know, for me, Barry is, the tone of Barry is something I really like, because I don't see it, you know, I the type of stuff I like and stuff I find funny, I think kind of tends to skew, I find a lot of stuff funny, but I feel like Barry's tone was this opportunity to do like a unique thing where you have like kind of deep emotional stuff. And then, but I always feel like it was very, very funny. Like, I think one of the funniest shows is actually a drama, which is The Sopranos. I think it's hilarious. And even though there's like not big jokes on the show, I think all the jokes just come from, and there's a genuine humor. It all comes from like the characters of it, because you're just observing and watching these people being completely earnest. And I think that was the, to me, I think that Barry is like a really funny show. I always try to tell people this. Yes, it is violent and it gets dark and it gets really deep and it explores some really difficult things, but I mean, I think the show's really funny.
Oh, it's funny. It's definitely funny. I think if you live in Hollywood, it's even funnier because the characters are too true to life.
Yeah, I mean, that was fun. I mean, we got to, in the beginning of that, we got to go down to the actor's studio and get a little behind the scenes look at that world, which was like Cousineau's world. And Howie Deutsch was like nice enough. He runs the place now. He was nice enough to kind of like let us in and observe and watch that world. And it's such like a fascinating, like intimate place where so much of that acting exercises were like psychological explorations, which is like so fun to watch because you kind of gets you able to be at the heart of like with these characters, you know. Acting is just a great way to explore psychology, you know, and watching him, like watching these people perform a scene and then come to the side of the stage and then him kind of interrogating them about, you know, how they thought they did and kind of peeling back all the layers. And it was such an intense, intimate process. And the funny thing about that was Barry, the character, is such a empty kind of non-human person. I don't know how you call him. He's just not, he's like the perfect character to put in that situation because he just lacks like almost like a core. I think he's trying to figure out what he is, and he wants to feel like a good person and he wants to have a purpose. But like putting him in that context immediately made sense to me because he's kind of like the worst person to put in there. He's just someone who has never explored his emotions, probably has repressed them so much because of all the stuff he's been through. And like the idea of putting him in that context was like, you know, I think that was like kind of the engine of the show, created a lot of good stuff, I think, that dynamic.
So this is spoiler territory now, listeners. It has such a definitive ending. Did you guys know it was going to be done in 4 seasons? Or were you like, because I think a lot of, especially American TV, they just write. They don't really have a definitive ending in mind. But you guys really you put a button on it. So I was just wondering, how did you know, like, you know?
I think part of that is that we kind of grew up on features more than TV. So this newer TV model of like, you know, of like shorter seasons and kind of more compact, condensed storytelling, like makes sense in terms of just doing like a beginning, middle, and end of a story. Mm-hmm. And I think like that appealed to Bill. And I think it was also like, to be honest, like I think the idea of doing it in four was, he was doing so much on the show too, that like, which is acting, directing, writing the thing. It's just like an insane amount of work. We shot three and four pretty much back to back because of COVID. And it was just like, it just felt like the right kind of thing practically. But in terms of story too, it wasn't just a practical decision. I mean, that's part of it. But in terms of story, I think the way that the show, so much was happening in terms of like story and Barry making these big moves and these revelations happening, that I think, to be honest to the way the show was going and to be honest the way we would be writing the story and if we were watching it, I don't think we could have taken it much farther, because I think that like we kept kind of painting ourselves into a corner and getting out, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think you can only do that so much before it becomes like ridiculous, right? And part of this thing was like, you know, at the end of season three, we were like, just the idea of Barry getting caught, that just seemed like such a natural thing that would have happened, you know? And we always thought of this story kind of as like, what if this was, and I think we kind of played with this with the whole thing of the Vanity Fair journalist in season four, kind of Temps Cousineau. Like, we thought of this as like, what if this was like some crazy, like true crime story is that you'd read in Vanity Fair about this guy who came out and wanted to become an actor. He probably would have gotten caught, but then there would have been this whole chapter after that too, you know, to resolve like what is the legacy and what is the story. So like him getting caught was not like the end of the, like the end is in season three, the finale. We were like, this is the next, we could not have ended the show on that. It's like, we have to have this final chapter to kind of like, you know, complete what this means, you know, just for it to have this like satisfying trajectory. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally does. Yeah. I mean, and I think especially now with streaming, people are kind of going more to like filmmaking style of writing where it just doesn't keep going forever, but it has like a definitive arc for the entire, you know, season. So I was just wondering though, because like, I mean, again, without spoiling it too much, there's really no coming back from that ending. So it's definitively done, I would say. I mean, I don't know, maybe you have a sequel in mind, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just funny because it was also, you know, just watching the show evolve too, you know, it seemed like I was talking to, you know, on the picket lines this summer, had a lot of opportunities to talk to other writers, and it's like you start having some real conversations, you know, when you get to know them. And, you know, we're all writers, we all have our opinions about stuff. And, you know, I would talk to people and sometimes people would be like, yeah, I don't know why you guys took it out of the theater. It was like this perfect kind of concept. And I loved the theater stuff so much. And I was like, no, I love the theater stuff too. But if you want to kind of push the story in certain directions, you know, like you kind of have to make sacrifices. And to make a story dynamic, you can't be just, you know, doing the same thing over and over. I know that's a good like formula and dynamic for certain other types of stories. I mean, it's built into like Seinfeld and other things like that, or, you know, like it works perfectly. King of the Hill, like that's the way those stories work, and they're great, and you wouldn't change them. But for Barry, you know, I think the story had such an engine to it, and we kind of put the stakes at a certain level that, like, once, you know, Cousineau knows, once Fuchs takes Cousineau out to Janice's body and says, you know, Barry Bergman did this, like, we actually, you know, the story has to fundamentally change, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just dishonest not to. And, you know, we did try to write some scenes because, you know, we try, you, when you're in these rooms, you just have to try everything, you know? You have to kind of explore every avenue, no matter how insane. And, you know, realize people other than on these podcasts, people don't really get to see how the sausage is made, you know, which is kind of a good thing sometimes. But you know, we did try to write some scenes that with Barry and Cousineau in the acting class after Cousineau knew that Barry had murdered Janice. And it just seemed so insane. Because, you know, the show, you want it to be fun, you want it to push things, but it's also like, there has to be grounded human behavior, too.
Yeah, it's got to be logical, for sure.
Yeah, and within the logic of the story. And so, like, but that, you know, in a way, that was, so we had to get rid of it. But then, and that, I know, like, was a big change. But I think that it allowed us to push on to some really, like, new, cool, I felt like seasons 3 and 4, I love first two seasons, but I really enjoyed being able to like really open up 3 and 4 and kind of and push toward like a proper ending, you know? And so that felt really good. And it was nice because when we were shooting, so we kind of written parts of season 4 before we ever really shoot season 3. So we were on set for 3, we shot 3, and then we kind of, once we were streamlining that, we go, okay, this really, knowing where we're going, this really helps us pace this thing out. So the pacing of the show I felt was very important because like to balance the comedy and a lot of the action stuff, you really have to kind of be careful about how you have to write it very deliberately, you know? And there wasn't a lot of like looseness available there. So like, you just have to like, so it really, we had this major advantage of like being able to like write season 4, shoot season 3, and then go back in and rewrite season 4.
Nice.
So that was really helpful. Just from a writing standpoint, that's really nice. I just think kind of knowing where you're going. I think that sounds limiting sometimes, but I think it's like kind of a cliche. It's another one of those true cliches, which is like, you know, there's like kind of freedom in this structure. There's like more freedom because it's like, it couldn't be anything. It's like, it's got to be this and that, but you kind of, you know, it kind of helps you creatively to know the boundaries, you know, where
Definitely.
You're going. And that was something that I think, made the writing of 3 and 4 kind of enjoyable and unique for us. So
that's awesome. I want to go back a little bit in the conversation. Something you said kind of piqued my interest. So when you were working on the mockumentary, like after you pitched and you started writing for them, but you hadn't moved to LA yet, what year was that roughly?
Oh God, I can't even remember now. It was 2014 maybe.
Okay, so that is definitely pre-COVID, pre-Zoom. So you're writing remotely up in Washington. Everyone else is in LA.
Yeah, we were just doing phone calls. Yeah, I was just mm-hmm. on the phone with those guys. Yeah.
I was going to ask, like, so, I mean, were you really even in a writer's room or were you mostly just like, I will just write it and see what you guys say and have my
notes? No, there was no writer's room. It was like literally just like sending emails and getting on the phone and talking about it. But I think that's how they work because they have like the leanest, fastest, kind of those SNL guys are just they have a totally different style of writing.
Oh, okay.
Where it's like nonstop, constant rewrites. This is why I think it works. They're so good at just coming up with new stuff. Everything's always up for grabs, and it's just this constant, like, constant conversations, constant motion, and you know, and then getting down on set and changing things on set. And there's a structure to it, but it's just very it's not traditional at all. And it was great kind of just experience to just get down there and just, again, for me, I felt like very thrown in the deep end because I'm like working with guys who like I just massively respected, you know, obviously close to Bill, but, you know, Seth and Fred and John and Kenward, those guys were, have done a lot of great, funny stuff. So it was pretty intense. I just tried to like stay focused every day and not really worry about how I was like, you know, the new person, and just tried my best to just, you know, add funny stuff to the mix. Because it was very easy to get intimidated on that job. Everyone was very cool and supportive, though. And then the nice thing about that, though, is that, you know, I did get a little lucky on that because I think it was like the SNL 40th was happening. So I think a lot of those guys were getting kind of pulled in that direction, too. So it was like there was extra work to be had. So it was just one of those very lucky opportunities where I was like, okay, I happen to be here at the right time when they actually need an extra person who's like really willing to get in there and do this stuff because I was like so hungry for an opportunity. And then Big Mouth was the first like proper room that I got in. And that that was a really fun room. I mean, it was an intense room in the sense of like going from like working with like one or two people on the phone and just kind of sharing like rewrites over email. Like that was Big Mouth was a full, like full on kind of like joke room, the way Andrew Goldberg was and Nick Kroll were running that room and Jen and Mark, they, you know, it was more like the traditional animation style, of like, you know, you write the script, you like, or you're like, just, a lot of freedom in pitching and then doing these very detailed outlines and then kind of like pitching out the outline and then, you know, the draft comes up and then you put the draft up and then you do joke passes. And and it was just full of super talented comedians.
I wanted to ask you about that because you got, like you said, thrown into the deep end here and, you know, you had experience on Big Mouth and Documentary Now, but over the course of 5 to 6 years on Barry, you went from staff writer to senior story editor or executive story editor to co-executive producer. And how did that transition? How did you feel going through that? Which of the roles did you like the best?
I was going to feel like, to me, you know, I don't really think about that stuff. I mean, I started off as executive story editor because I did have some experience, you know, in a couple, like with Doc Now and then Big Mouth. I think you don't really think about your title so much as like just kind of going in the room and just trying to be as like contribute as much as possible. And I think, I never really felt like my role changed on the show. My role did change in terms of like what I was like aiming to do. You know, I think the first couple of seasons I was more of a traditional just writer. And I think because I was like writing like good drafts, I think that always helps. Like, I think if any advice I could give, if people are like trying to find practical advice on, from this podcast or whatever, is like when you're working for a showrunner, look at the way they write their drafts. Look at the way the senior writers write their drafts. There was another senior writer, both Bill and Alec wrote really strong drafts. Liz Sarnoff, who was like our co-showrunner, she's an amazing writer who wrote on like Lost and Deadwood. She came over to Barry because she knows story so well, and she was like this extra secret weapon. I looked at her drafts too. She writes amazing drafts. You can just learn so much when you're first starting out, looking at the drafts of kind of the top level writers, and just try to absorb as much of that as possible. And that style and that structure, I don't think it's like going to be limiting for your own style. It's just like learning a new style. Cause each time you're in a room, you have to kind of write a different style of script if you're going to be working for people. So I think for me, I think one advantage that I had was I was like, I feel like I was writing strong drafts on that show. And if you write strong drafts, they just give you more work, you know?
Cool.
And I also felt like I kind of like, you know, again, it helps too. Cause I've kind of a similar taste as Bill. We like kind of the same stuff. So it's like, you know, you always want to be pitching things in the same kind of like, it helps to have that too. I mean, in terms of like being in the world of like where your pitches live, like, cause I think this is kind of speaks to maybe like another thing that might be helpful in terms of like advice for writers is like, so I was able to post COVID, because there was just like a shakeup of like, you know, just personnel. I was able to like get, like, I think I worked on set a lot more. I was on set for all of season 3 and on season 4. And the reason why I bring this up is I'm just saying that like, I think if you get that opportunity as a writer, it's one thing to be in the room and like learn the dynamics of the room. That's super important. But it's so important to just get that production experience and just be there every day, watch the process, kind of like learn how everything works, try to be involved in as much as possible. And it that actually, you take stuff from production that will make you such a stronger writer too. And I think that like that was such an indispensable part of my experience. And like, plus I think just being on set is more fun too. I mean, the writer's room is, you're extremely lucky if you're in a writer's room. But you know, cause like hard work, cause a lot of times you're just banging your head against the wall and going through ideas that aren't working and trying to sort the ones out that, you know, that have some value. And it just, it's an arduous process. And, you know, it's not, I think people kind of tend to romanticize a little bit and be like, oh, you're all hanging around, everyone's like loving ideas and stuff. It can be pretty intense, but I think like if you, you know, you get this stuff right and then you go to, once it's time to produce it, like that's when kind of the set is when like the magic kind of happens and you're seeing this stuff come to life and you see what you need, what you don't need, what works, like seeing it all in practice. There's no substitute for doing that. So, I mean, I would just say to like any younger writer out there that's like listening to this, like the second that you get the opportunity to be on set, just take it and just, you'll learn so much. You'll have so much fun and you'll feel, yeah. And it'll make you a better writer when you're back in the room. So
yeah, I learned a lot being on set when I produced some of my own shorts. Roshni was there, she knows.
it's a different beast, but it is, you do learn a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's next for you, Duffy? How do you follow up that your success with Barry? What are you working on?
I mean, I feel like you're always just trying to keep the opportunity. You want to just keep making things and having the opportunity to make things. And right now, been just, you know, working on some like TV stuff that can't really talk about right now, but you know, me and Bill are writing a couple features too. So we've been working, and some of these we started over COVID and so he'll be directing them. And that's going to be, you know, so the goal right now is to just, you know, find the right, you know, timing for all the stuff, you know, because definitely want to work more in TV, going to work more in TV. But, you know, we have these two movies that we really want to make. And so.
Well, you guys are a great team. I'm sure I look forward to them. I love everything Bill does. He's hilarious. And he's got such a great way of presence on screen. I mean, his work on Barry was fantastic. The one thing I have to question is why from Cleveland? Why was Barry from Cleveland?
You know,
I'm from Cleveland, so I gotta, we're not all serial killers.
It wasn't a knock on Cleveland. I just think like we just needed we just needed him to be from somewhere not Los Angeles, and it ended up being Cleveland.
Okay.
And I think he could have been from Tulsa. He could have been from other places. I think he just happened to be living in Cleveland at the time, really. And Ohio to us is like similar to Oklahoma in a lot of ways. We don't know it as well. So it kind of gave us a little more freedom. Cause I think if we made Barry from Oklahoma, we'd just get too caught up in all the details of that, you know?
Fair enough.
No dig at Cleveland or Ohio. So.
All right, cool. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. Check out Barry on HBO Max. All four seasons are there now. And follow us online at WG Therapy on Instagram and X. And visit writersgrouptherapy.com for more. Otherwise, we'll see you next time.